Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody is doing well. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Blake Topmeyer, who is the SEC columnist for the USA Today Network. Blake, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking time to be with us. And, Blake, anytime we get a chance to talk about our former friend Jeremy Pruitt, we're happy to do so here on this program. And he will have his day in court coming up on April 19th when he meets with the Committee on Infractions in Cincinnati. What do you make of the Jeremy Pruitt part of this and him finally, I guess, getting his date in court, for lack of a better term, coming up on the 19th?
Yeah, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult for Jeremy Pruitt to wriggle out on enough of these charges, allegations, to avoid stiff penalties. I mean, we've really seen from the start that I think Pruitt was headed for a bad fate here with the NCAA. I mean, when really dating back to when Tennessee called that press conference in January 2021. And its own chancellor, Dondi Plowman, cited a, quote, stunning amount of malfeasance from Jeremy Pruitt on down. And that was supported in the NCAA notice of allegations that came out last summer, in which Jeremy Pruitt and those who were around him tallied 17 of the 18 level one violations in that NCAA report, which is just a whopping number. I mean, it's one of the biggest numbers I can recall in recent years of an NCAA case. For context, we all remember the Ole Miss recruiting scandal from a handful of years ago when Hugh Freeze was the coach. I believe the total number of allegations in that NCAA report was 15. So this is as Dondi Plowman put it, a stunning number. I think he's going to, I would think he's going to try to plead ignorance to this and say, you know, this was all going on without his support, without his knowledge underneath him. I think, you know, based on some of the evidence compiled and laid out in that notice of allegations, that's probably going to be hard to do. And if that doesn't work, if he's not able to shift the blame to his underlings, at that point, he might pull out the blowtorch and just kind of go scorched earth and try to say, you know, hey, if I'm going to go down with a show cause penalty, I'm going to try to take Tennessee down with me.
Yeah, I'd advise anybody out there curious about what's coming here to read Blake's column headline. Jeremy Pruitt is just a sideshow. Real showdown is Tennessee versus NCAA. It's you do a great job of laying this out, Blake. And a few things I found really interesting. One is you believe that Tennessee, of course, anybody who remembers that press conference, and yes, stunning. It's amazing how much more stunning these were given how bad the football was, right? Like, the football makes it so much more stunning. Like, the winning football, it's like, well, you know, we had made some mistakes. But it was just incredibly stunning given the awful football Jeremy Pruitt put on the field. But one of the things that you clearly believe here is that Tennessee's decision not to fire Philip Fulmer, but to instead kind of say, hey, you know, basically exclude him from blame, say, hey, we're going to move on, and thanks, Philip, for all you did. That may actually be costly to Tennessee.
Well, Tennessee's whole approach here was to say it fired the bad actors, it spit out the bad seeds, and it's going to sort of trust the NCAA to kind of do the right thing, for whatever that means. But they are facing this level one failure to monitor charge. And while Philip Fulmer is not facing any NCAA allegations, you know, part of the athletic director's job is to monitor the athletic department, right? Particularly, I think, an athletic director who was hired in no small part because of his Tennessee football expertise. He was omnipresent around Jeremy Pruitt's program. I mean, you couldn't go to a football practice and not have Philip Fulmer, at the very least, be there as a spectator.
Maybe doing some drills.
Yeah, at the most, be there as an assistant offensive line coach. And so, you know, you do wonder how that's going to sit with the NCAA's Committee on Infractions, this whole, well, we fired the bad actors, we cleaned house, et cetera. Oh, by the way, we invited our athletic director to the press conference to announce Jeremy Pruitt's firing, and did not fire the athletic director, but in fact sent him off with a sweet retirement package. If you recall, guys, I mean, Philip Fulmer sat up during that press conference and was asked to assess the Jeremy Pruitt tenure, and he said, quote, recruiting was good.
So amazing.
It's just a totally surreal moment. And it's like, Philip, you do understand why we're all here today, right? Evidently he didn't. So, you know, I'm not saying that Philip Fulmer is going to be facing any allegations. He's not facing any allegations. But when it comes to how Tennessee, you know, kind of defends itself in front of the NCAA here, I do think that was a potential misstep and kind of, you know, may affect their argument a little bit of, you know, we took proper recourse and proper action. And you also wonder, is Jeremy Pruitt going to try or be able to pin any of this on Philip Fulmer? I think he may struggle to do that. I think if there were any real fuel there, we'd probably know about it by now. And the NCAA maybe would have compiled evidence of that. We don't have anything in this report that says that they did. But I mean, you kind of have two options here, right? Either Philip Fulmer knew it was going on, and didn't do anything to stop it, which there's no evidence been presented of that. But your other option is that your athletic director, who is at least in some level in charge of monitoring your football program, had his head buried in the sand. And had no idea that this was going on, and I think that's part of the reason why you have a failure to monitor charge.
Blake Topmeyer with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Blake, to that point, I think a lot of Tennessee fans have kind of moved on from this to some degree, just because of the time that has transpired since then, and the feeling of cooperation that Tennessee fans thought the administration had here. But if you're a Tennessee fan hearing about all this, how nervous should you be that potentially some more punishment could be coming down the line for Tennessee?
I think you should be nervous for a number of reasons. Number one, this is a, quote, stunning amount of malfeasance. So that's number one, why you should be concerned. Number two, Tennessee is facing a level one allegation, the failure to monitor charge. That is the lesser charge as compared to the lack of institutional control. But the NCAA did use some pretty stiff language when it came to that failure to monitor charge in that notice of allegations last summer. Number three, Tennessee is pinning a lot of its strategy for the outcome here in hopes of avoiding the stiffest penalties on the NCAA constitution that was approved last August, which says, quote, to the greatest extent possible, to the greatest extent possible, the NCAA now is supposed to avoid penalties that affect current student athletes who weren't involved in, I guess, the sins of the father, so to speak. They weren't around, didn't have a hand in any of this shenanigans that were going on. That in the NCAA, quote, to the greatest extent possible, is supposed to avoid punishments that affect those people. Well, we don't really know what the greatest extent possible means, right? That's kind of a nebulous phrase. And we also have not seen a case of this magnitude adjudicated since that new constitution went into effect. So this is sort of a litmus test for how that new constitution will be applied. So that's another thing. Also, I think sometimes folks forget there's really multiple arms of the NCAA. There's NCAA enforcement, which does the investigation, and in this case, in conjunction with the university, kind of a joint investigation. They compile the evidence. They produce the notice of allegations. But this is now going in front of the Committee on Infractions, which is more like the judge. And they don't always, you know, if you kind of had a warm and fuzzy feeling with the NCAA enforcement while you brought them into your house to conduct the investigation, the Committee on Infractions doesn't always see eye to eye with enforcement. They may or may not. And so the fact that this is going before, though, the committee infractions would give me some concern, because it means that Tennessee has not reached a negotiated resolution. A lot of these cases now are decided in what's called negotiated resolution phase, which means you don't even go before the Committee on Infractions. The case is already settled. Your penalties are already settled up front. The two parties, being in this case, it would be Tennessee and the NCAA, would have come to terms. Now, Jeremy Pruitt also did not come to a negotiated resolution. That's not really a surprise. I don't think there's anything that could be offered to Jeremy Pruitt that he would have found agreeable. Like, he's got to go argue his case. Otherwise, I think he's very likely looking at a show cause penalty. A negotiated resolution would have done him no favors. But I do think there was some thought that maybe Tennessee would be able to come to a negotiated resolution, get sort of a slap on the wrist plea deal, and move along with things. The fact that they haven't reached that and that it's going in front of the Committee on Infractions doesn't necessarily mean that Tennessee is going to get hit with the hammer here. But I think it does give you some pause and some concern if you're a Tennessee fan of, like, why is this still ongoing? Because Tennessee's not dragging this out just to drag it out. The fact that they're going to argue their case in front of the Committee on Infractions tells you that they haven't been offered what they would feel like is an acceptable resolution to this point.
All right, so I want predictions, Blake. First of all, I mean, I agree. There's got to be some kind of show cause. How long of a show cause do you think Pruitt will get? Do you think there will be any financial restitution for him from Tennessee? Like you said, they were talking big with the lawsuit. That never happened. And also, do you think that Tennessee gets a postseason ban for a year?
So I think, predictions time. I would lean toward Jeremy Pruitt getting a show cause of multiple years. I don't know what the number is. You know, is that what did Donnie Kendall get? He had a 10-year show cause. You know, he had some sort of whopper number like that, right?
God, was it that long? I thought it was five. Was it 10? Jeez.
I think it might have been 10. I mean, it's just a crazy number. Bruce Pearl got 3 years, I believe it was. Yeah, I would say predictions. Maybe probably three plus years for Jeremy Pruitt for a show cause, unless he can produce, you know, some sort of unbelievable evidence here that somehow he was in the dark about all this, which I think he's going to have a hard time doing. Will a lawsuit ever come? I don't know. I sort of tend to think if Jeremy Pruitt had good grounds for a lawsuit, he would have already filed that. I mean, he's still within his statute of limitations, I believe, to file one if he thinks he has a case. But I think the one thing Tennessee, I think, indefensibly had right or undeniably had right in this was its contract was pretty ironclad with Jeremy Pruitt. I can question some of the moves they've made and will they work, will they backfire, all this other stuff. It's still kind of hanging in the balance. But I think their contract language, and I've talked to a couple of third-party lawyers about this, that aren't involved in representing anybody here, about that contract language. They said, you know, Tennessee's fire for cause contract language, I mean, they had tons of provisions in there, and it's pretty ironclad language. And so I think if Jeremy Pruitt gets a show cause penalty, I think he's going to have a really hard time having a case to sue Tennessee. And he hasn't brought one yet. Tennessee's made no signs of wanting a settlement. So I don't know that we see that. Number three, does Tennessee get a postseason ban? I don't know. That's still kind of hanging up in the air. If you trust the NCAA Constitution, you would say, no way. You can't punish the current athletes for something that happened before. We know in the past that the NCAA has had no problem doing that, and they've even done it, you know, to these schools that have exhibited, quote-unquote, exemplary cooperation. You know, Missouri comes to mind a few years ago. They got patted on the back for exemplary cooperation in an academic fraud case, and then they got kneecapped at the sentencing stage and got postseason bans across multiple sports. This is supposedly a new day for the NCAA, but we all know better than to put too much trust in the NCAA and these processes to follow up on their word. But I guess I would still lean toward no postseason ban, but I think there are going to be, you know, maybe some penalties that are harsher than what Tennessee would have hoped for on the front end. We have to remember, they didn't self-impose a ton. They self-imposed 12 scholarship reductions in 2021. I question whether some of those scholarships would have been able to be filled anyway after the mass exodus of coaching change. And then they self-imposed some recruiting restrictions. So I don't think it should come as a great shock if Tennessee is hit with some more penalties here. Because, again, I think it's hard to argue that they self-imposed a ton for this amount of allegations. But I think anything short of a postseason ban should be a stomachable outcome for Tennessee. And I guess if I was to predict, I think they do avoid the postseason ban on this.
Well, Blake, great stuff as always. You've done a great job of reporting around this. We appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Blake Tottmeyer from USA Today, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Preds fans, don't miss tomorrow night's Smashville Live at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue starting at 6 o'clock. You can see your Predators star players up close and personal, plus have your chance to get autographs and pictures. Smashville Live brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, Superbook Sports, and Dolce Vita, tequila pure and simple. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We'll have Predators general manager David Poyle coming up at 8:30. So looking forward to that conversation with him. Thanks to Blake Tottmeyer for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, I got to tell you, I'd pay a pretty good amount of money to be in there to watch Jeremy Pruitt defend himself against the NCAA infractions committee.
I need to believe that Pruitt has decided, kind of like Lamar Jackson with no agent, to go no lawyer.
Oh, it'd be great.
Point of order. Be like,
well, much like most of my coaching career on the sideline, I had no idea what was going on over there. I was just always looking forward.
Oh, no, that's good.
Thank you.
God.
Blake at first down marker's been there the whole time.
By the way, that clip right there was him talking to Blake right there.
Trying
to explain the game of football to Blake.
It's that orange thing on the sideline over there, Blake. Not me. It's not my whiteboard either.
Man, I know.
I do miss him from that regard. Like, it was a lot of fun to listen to him talk.
Man, I tell you what. I forget who came up with this. What, coordinator cornbread? Is that what Come on.
Was that a Big Orange Mac creation? Coordinator cornbread?
Was that Big Orange Mac? Oh, that'd be awesome. I hope so. I hope that was Big Orange Mac. Coordinator cornbread.
I like to throw the ball. Like to run it. It's my belief you should be able to do both. Thank you, Jeremy.
You know, Pruitt should get a show cause, I'd say. In these things forever and ever, and it was done poorly for so long by the NCAA, not enough punishment given to people who actually did things wrong, and way too much punishment to people, you know, just the program left behind. I mean, obviously – there's still administration in place, you know, typically, and things like that. But you're hurting coaches and players usually who are brand new. And if Tennessee, if there was a serious consideration of a postseason ban for Tennessee this season, I mean, that to me would be infuriating. So I guess this is the Homer Network, but I'm sorry, but that would. Do you disagree, Kentucky?
Me?
Do you disagree, BBN?
No, listen, I never think, whatever it may be, I think it's always one of the stupidest things that the current team gets punished when basically everybody is out the door, whether players or coaches or anything, but it's like, oh, you know what? We're just going to punish you all, and you had absolutely nothing to do with it. No, that'd be absolutely ridiculous.
You see Nate's
question? Can't keep Joe Milton out of the postseason? What are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The playoff?
Milton will throw it from Knoxville to the Duke's Mayo Bowl and drop it in the bucket of mayo.
Then he'll join Will Levis in eating mayo in his coffee.
Maybe so.
Nate says, with unknown punishments looming in Knoxville, coaches can leave to wherever, whenever. Should us Vols fans be concerned with Josh Heupel potentially leaving? I know I wouldn't want to be around a bunch of punishments from the last coach's actions handcuffing me as a head coach. So, first of all.
He just signed a gigantic contract extension, so probably not.
I mean, you need to be concerned with Heupel leaving if Oklahoma's open and they say, come home, Josh, we love you, we wronged you, now we want you to, you know, you will have a greater tenure than Bob Stoops ever did, come home, or what else? I mean, maybe Alabama coming after him. You know? Yeah. Remember when people worried about that Pruitt?
Yeah.
Are they going to steal Pruitt from us?
Steal Pruitt away.
The NFL. Yeah. Well, I guess. You know, could it happen that an NFL team would throw the kitchen sink at Heupel? But no, he's not leaving because of this. I mean, again, I think it's not going to be a postseason ban. That would be crazy to me, given the cooperation and again what they're supposed to be doing now and what they have said they're going to be doing now.
This would basically turn
them into immediate liars.
I think you all should keep Tennessee out of the postseason. Keep them from going for a bowl.
Listen,
I did that quite well during my tenure.
It'll be Joe Milton, number one overall, and Josh Heupel will be the offensive genius. They'll go together. They'll become a package deal, and the rest will be history.
Maybe so.
Yeah, there you go.
Coming up next, Lions. We'll be joined by Predators general manager David Poile. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds, their win last night against Calgary, and still alive in the playoff race. We'll get into that. Coming up next. Speaking of that, season tickets for the Preds 2023-24 season are on sale now. Preds are celebrating their 25th anniversary throughout next season. Full half and quarter season plans are available, and you can join the Loyal Legion today and receive the best seat locations at the best pricing and up to 50% off discounts on concessions throughout the season as well. Priority access to the 2023 NHL Draft and awards, which are hosted right here in Nashville this summer. You can learn more at NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. Once again, that's NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. A big win for the Nashville Predators last night against Calgary. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Predators General Manager David Poile, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. David, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Fantastic game last night. It was the season was on the line, and we went in a shootout. It was just kind of those games you dream of playing in, I would think, as a player and as a manager. It was really thrilling to see our guys hang in there and eventually get the win. So we're still alive with two games to go.
Yep, absolutely. And like you said, still alive, had to have it last night, and you got it. And obviously you guys need a little bit of help this week as the week goes along here. But what can you say about your guys, especially with the injuries that we've talked about with you every week and the trade deadline decisions, all those things where, it's going to come down to the final week here in the NHL regular season to determine your playoff fate?
Yeah, I think it starts with our goaltender. UC Saros has been just fabulous. I mean, when you talk about best goaltenders in the league, you talk about the Vezina trophy. I mean, to me, he has got to be in the top three. I know it's sometimes optics, if you're a playoff team versus a non-playoff team, like the Boston Bruins have like 63 wins and their goaltender Allmark has just been fantastic. But I tell you that we're nowhere near this without Juice, and I certainly hope he gets some recognition at the end of the season for his play and gets properly voted for the Vezina Trophy. The other thing, just guys just hanging in there, I think Ryan McDonagh deserves a lot of credit for mostly all of our top guys out and our leadership out with Roman Yossi, Duchesne, Forsberg, et cetera. I mean, he's really stepped to the forefront, I think, as a leader on our team to keep our younger group together. I'd say the same for Colton Sissons, who plays the hardest minutes on our team, always playing against the top lines of the other team. And, again, with the shortage of players that we have playing bigger minutes than he's played all year long. So, a lot of heroes right now. Again, it's been exciting. I think at the trading deadline, we thought we would be playing meaningless games at the end of the season, and we're not. I think that's fantastic for character of our guys, and I think it's fantastic for as we look to the future for the Predators.
So, Dave, let's just say someone on the day of the trading deadline says to you, "Hey, this team, this very different looking younger team." Here's all the injuries. Let me lay those out for you. Here's all the injuries that are going to come. The guys are going to be hurt, and you're going to be in this thing still with two games to play. You say what?
I'd say that was unrealistic at the time, being 100% honest. I mean, you're taking away top fours of your team, Matthias Ekholm on the back end. What we didn't know also is we didn't have any idea that we'd be so banged up and have so many injuries. I mean, you know, 2 nights ago we had 9 players out. So, no realistic chance based on what has happened. But I mean, as I've always said, you just never know in this business. I mean, we have given other people opportunities that would not have gotten those opportunities, and they have come through. And as I just said earlier, I think it's been a struggle in some games. Like last night, you know, we get 2 goals, which if you get to 3, you usually have a chance to win. And we've been having trouble scoring. But I think this could come, you know, with the younger players like Tomasino and Evangelista, to name a couple of guys. But I'm very proud of what's taking place in what was and has been at times a very, very difficult year to be where we are. I think that if I was after training down, if I was to write down where I thought we should be and what would make me feel good about our team and about the future, this is what it looks like.
David, Jake Livingstone gets his first point last night, and obviously you guys signed him after the college season. How did the process come about to get him in the fold with your team, and what do you think he can be at the NHL level as he continues to develop here, coming straight out of college to the NHL?
Yeah, kudos to our scouting staff led by Jeff Kelty and our college guru, Greg Dreschel. They followed Jake for the last couple of years, formed a relationship with him when the opportunity presented itself. So we've been, watched a lot of his games and met him, a few times. And, there's always competition for these players coming out of college, these undrafted players. And I think our guys, created a path for him to be able to show that we had opportunity for him. And it's worked out well for him, and it's worked out well for us. I mean, again, we didn't forecast all these injuries, but with those injuries, he's been put in the lineup in the last, 3 games, and he's done a really, really good job. So it's a lot for him, that's for sure. I'm sure if we sat down with him, which we will at the end of the season, his head's probably spinning a little bit. But he's a little bit older. He's a bigger kid. He can skate, move the puck. So far, so good.
You mentioned those injuries, David, but obviously you saw Parson coming back last night. I felt like that was an important add. What does that mean? And do you think, is it possible anyone else, I guess Yossi would probably be the most likely, could still make a late return here?
Well, yeah, Roman's on the trip with us, as is Philip Forsberg, Cole Smith, players that we think are all close. But, every day brings a new day. I mean, I think there's a chance, but again, I think I felt that with another day. So I can't give you a clear answer. I wish I could, and I'm sure I wish the players especially, I'm sure they would want to be playing, especially where we are right now with 2 games to go and still having a chance.
David, I want to circle back to Saros, because I feel like sometimes maybe we just take for granted the goaltending that he brings to the table on a nightly basis. But really, ever since he's taken over as a starter, he has really fully inserted himself in the Vezina Trophy conversation every year. From your experience, just being around goaltenders as long as you have, how difficult is it to put together the consistency level that Saros has put together for you guys the last 3 years?
Well, I think everybody has, obviously a certain degree of talent, but I think you're hitting the nail on the head. The consistency, the pressure that comes with the position, the way we're playing now, like you give up a goal, it's like, oh my gosh, we got to score 2. And that's been hard for us to do. So our margin of error, our ability to win games, is going to be really defined by our goals against more so than our goals for. And Juice has given us that. I mean, I go back to the whole thing with Pecorini, being the best player we've probably had in our franchise history, the passing of the torch to Saros. It was done so well, their bond, their friendship, what they respecting each other as not only a people, but the goaltending profession. And it was a pretty seamless transition from Pekka to Juice. And last year we saw what Juice could do, getting, I think, his 3rd in the Vezina. And this year, again, with playing equally, if not better, with a team that was not quite as good as last year. So I give Juice all the plaudits that he deserves, because he's just been great night after night.
Dante Fabbro has obviously has been thrust into a more important role, a little bit of power play time. He's out there, obviously, a lot. David, what have you seen from him here in terms of taking advantage of this opportunity?
I think that, again, we signed him to a contract. You know, it has not been the best season for Dante. And then I think the contract with a show of, you know, good faith and belief. And then, again, injuries come and Dante's thrust into a higher role. But I think there's more to Dante's game. I think he has a higher ceiling. And I think this summer, our conversation at the end of the year are going to be very important. And, you know, you talk about the consistency that Juice has. Well, not just Dante, but other players too. But I think Dante is at the age now, and I think he can see where he can be a bigger factor in the game, make more of a contribution. And I'd like to, you know, challenge Dante to having a strong summer of fitness, you know, more speed, more strength, so that he can be, you know, thrust into these bigger situations on a consistent basis.
Well, David, we really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Should be a very fun week here, two final games at home of the regular season. And like you said, the playoff hope's still alive in the last week of the regular season. Thanks for being with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's your Predators General Manager David Poile, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. And Joe, like you said, it's a big win for the Preds last night. You take down Calgary. And you need some help. They're in a spot in the standings right now where basically, I mean, it's not basically, they got to win both of these games, and they need Winnipeg to lose both of these next games in regulation. Winnipeg plays tonight. They beat San Jose last night. So Winnipeg back-to-back tonight on the road against Minnesota. If you're a Predators fan, you are pulling like heck for Minnesota to win the game in regulation tonight if you are looking to make the playoffs. Got to have it.
Yep. Yeah, and then that turns Thursday into a huge night with, you know, the Preds playing at the same time as the Jets. So everyone just has to watch tonight. What'd you call it? The tragic number? The tragic number.
Tragic number. Credit to John Glennon, who I don't think invented the term, but just reminded me of it.
Yeah, the tragic number is one. So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance. There. If you go by the numbers, I think Money Puck has them at 3.6% to make the playoffs this morning, which is up from 2.2% yesterday.
Yeah, you only went up 1.4%.
Everyone watch Miracle tonight and get in all the feels.
I mean, you should watch Miracle anyway.
I haven't seen that in a while. It's a great movie.
I love it. It's my favorite sports movie of all time.
Wow. That's a take.
I'm just saying. It's my favorite.
It's a good movie.
Of all time. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds. We'll take your thoughts on the quarterback discussion that we had earlier in the show as well, with Will Levis scheduled to visit the Titans today. What do you make of Will Levis and what you think he'll be at the NFL level? We'll get into all that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Join 102.5 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament benefiting Souls for Souls coming up on June the 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. You can put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebs to support a great cause and have loads of fun. Plus, you'll have the chance to win awesome prizes. You can sign up to play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenashville.com/golf. Welcome back in. Final segment, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to David Poile for being with us in the last segment. And, you know, what you're hoping for, we talked about it, the path. Have Minnesota win tonight, and then you take down Minnesota on Thursday, and then that Colorado game Friday hopefully can mean something. If it does mean something in terms of a playoff berth, I guess I would expect Soros to get both of them coming up Thursday and Friday. Like, you can't go into a must-win game with anybody other than him.
Right. No, I agree. You know, 5 years ago, we looked at the Preds and the Jets, and we said, this is going to be one of the great rivalries.
We did.
Two teams built for long-term success that are just going to be going at it. What if 5 years later the Jets completely gag away a division that was theirs to the Preds? Is the rivalry back?
Well, it wouldn't be a division. It would be a wild card spot. But
oh, yeah. Well, yeah. You know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Completely gag away a
He's like, really,
spot.
Robbie? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know
just
what I'm saying.
Point it out.
That's fine. That's fine. Just accuracy saying. Is important.
Just saying.
But, yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
What? Well, I mean, seriously. Look, I think Corey Curtis, the Jets and you blow this.
I think Corey Curtis hit the nail on the head yesterday, though. Like, I was watching that game Saturday, and they kept showing, like, the shots outside the arena, and it's just ice and snow everywhere. And I'm like, man, it's April. How do people do that?
Yeah.
How do you live up there? And look, I have great fondness for the people of Winnipeg. They're very nice to me. And I go on like a Winnipeg media tour every time the Predators and Jets play. They love their hockey up there. It's mm-hmm. great stuff. But I looked at that and I was like, man, it's April.
I could never.
And it's 25 degrees and snowing outside. What's going on?
It's a great question. I lived south of Canada, and where I lived, I could not live again.
Same.
Yeah. So, yeah. Hardy folks. Hardy folks, those Winnipeggians.
You wonder why Southerners are happier and nicer? The weather. I would say that's a fair reason why.
Yeah. Weather and the fried food. That's what we do.
And the banana pudding.
That too. The Soros part of this is pretty incredible. Like, it's the third year that he's put himself in this conversation. Now, look, I don't think he's going to win the Vezina Trophy. I think it's going to be Ullmark. I looked at the odds. I mean, Ullmark's a heavy favorite to win
He's
the Vezina Trophy. So he's probably going to win, and he probably deserves to win. But the fact that Soros has put himself in this conversation again, you know, it's very early still. It's, you know, in Soros' career as a starter, we're talking about basically the third full year that he's been the starter. And he's been in the Vezina Trophy conversation every time. I mean, it's pretty good. They've been spoiled around here with goaltending. Pecorine, as he mentioned, the best player in the history of the franchise. You know, Soros is on a track where he's, as a starter, he has been better than Pekka was to start his career. And that's hard to do, to follow it up that way.
And there's a guy behind him who might.
Could be better.
Yeah, overtake Could him be. At some point.
Maybe.
How about that?
They got the goaltending position figured out around here, I think.
They do. They need to trade one of them and make themselves a better team.
They probably do.
I mean, they have to.
Yeah, at some point, I think they're going to have to. So we'll see what happens on that front. Joe, Will Levis visiting the Tennessee Titans today. And we've talked a lot throughout the show about Will Levis and Anthony Richardson and Hendon Hooker. We've had a lot of spicy opinions on all three on the text line today. The Will Levis part of this, I just continue to be fascinated of where exactly he's going to land. A lot of momentum to the Colts right now. Mel Kiper came out with his latest mock draft. He's got Levis going to the Colts, and he's got the Titans trading up to 3 at Arizona and taking Anthony Richardson. So
he has Hendon Hooker as an undrafted
agent. Yeah, Hendon Hooker. No one picking him up ever. I don't know where he's got Hendon Hooker, but he's not very high on him.
Yeah.
He's very down on Hendon Hooker. But there is a lot of momentum, at least a lot of conversation out there about the Titans trading up to number 3. And yeah, I'm starting to approach too good to be true narrative out there, because it'd be great for us. I would love it. But that's where Mel Kiper has him, is the Titans trading up to 3 and taking Anthony Richardson with the 3rd pick. That'd be something.
Oh, man. Oh, the takes. Oh, the reaction.
Want to hear another take? I've heard a trading up to 2 taking C.J. Stroud out there.
Well, I feel fairly confident
that
the Houston Texans are not trading with the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, they're not going to say, yeah, you come get
no,
the guy
listen,
that we were going to trade.
That's what I said, but
no,
yeah.
Somebody brought that up earlier on the text line. Like, a mock draft has that. Like, and I think it was a CBS Sports one.
Yeah, they have it.
You've got 5,000 people doing these mock drafts,
yeah.
So it's hard to keep up. But apparently one out there has the Titans trading up to 2 with Houston. I'm like, yeah, I don't think the Texans are doing
pretty
that.
Sure that's not going to happen. 80% of the mock drafts last year had the Titans taking an inside linebacker. So
that is true.
In the first round. So, yeah. I would, if you're someone in the next few weeks who – trying to be discerning about your mock draft consumption, you know, go with people. Well, people like, I think, McShay and Jeremiah, and certainly the author of The Beast, Dane Brugler, but also, like, I think maybe, you know, people who cover teams on a daily basis. Those can be interesting. There's a whole bunch of just fluff out there. That's a lot of it is just, you know, looking at someone else's mock draft and just putting it out there. Why? What have you got? You're laughing. Did I say butts again when I meant to say bets?
DJ Burnside has put together a nice coordinator cornbread mix-up on the Twitter. in place of some Martha White cornbread, which is just fantastic. Just add water.
Jeremy Pruitt, coordinator cornbread. Is there any way we could, you know, with Will Levis coming in today, can you imagine some of that Jeremy Pruitt cornbread with some mayo-soaked coffee?
Or just eating the banana straight out of the peel.
Yeah.
Saving some time, not peeling that thing back.
I mean, that is so much
grosser.
That
could be your QB1. That could be your QB1.
By the way, we talk about the mayo and the coffee, which is gross, and I would never do it, but eating the whole banana is so much grosser, right?
I have an idea.
How could you even do that?
So since Robbie's going to win Pick to Click, I won Pigskin Pick'em. If the Tennessee Titans draft Will Levis, you need to eat a banana with the field, Joe.
Wow. Let's do that right at you. I like it.
Because I'm losing all the competitions?
Yes.
I mean, I'll try.
Seriously?
But you need to stand near me because if I throw up, I want it to get on your shoes.
Look, the more we talk about this, like with the coffee and the mayo and the banana stuff, like people had a big problem with the coffee and the mayo on the text line yesterday. Doesn't the Will Levis, Jim Irsay connection kind of make sense? Like, if that was their quarterback, wouldn't that kind of make sense?
So, in other words, like, imagine what you put in your coffee if you're on hallucinogens?
Just a little bit strange. Kind of goes together well. It could be a nice vibe there.
Here, throw these mushrooms in your coffee. Yeah, it just smells like cow poop. Don't worry. It's tasty.
I'm just saying there's a lot of momentum to Levis going number four. And the more I think about it, the more I think that may be a good match.
I think wherever Will Levis goes, I am going to immediately like follow that team more closely than any other team. It's just going to be fascinating. But the Richardson thing is too.
Yeah, but I think he eats normal food. Like, I think
you don't have all the normal. You don't have the, well, as far as we know, you don't have the quirky Will Levis stuff. I mean, I can't, you know, the Levis, there's so much conversation around him that I find interesting. And like the interviews.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I haven't really heard that lately. Was that BS? Was that somebody trying to throw someone off the trail, or is that really a thing?
It's a great question. I mean,
text Rabel today.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get him on the air to give us a blow by blow of the interview.
Friend of the show. Yeah. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, but the fact that they're taking this strong of a look at quarterbacks is at the very least intriguing to me. Now, this is going to be great when pick number 11 rolls around and it's Paris Johnson Jr. and we're like, all right.
That's why we need to enjoy this time. While we can talk about quarterbacks, we need to enjoy this all the way to the draft until we're like, so Paris Johnson's punch looked really good in week 4 against Northwestern. Can't wait.
You know, Paris Johnson and Nicholas Petitfrere played together. Did you know that?
Oh, my goodness. State. At least then we can go back to Vrabel is trying to like set up the Titans and not feel bad about him going to Ohio State. He's trying to bring as much here before he goes there.
That does it for us today on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Jason, Michelle and Junie coming up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.